Support for the Exchange podcast from NHPR comes from you, our subscribers, and from Edvest and You, a loan product of the NEEF Network, a local nonprofit agency providing college student loans and student loan refinancing options. Information online at nhstudentloans.org or by calling 1-855-887-5430.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. Beyond a few yard signs, it doesn't really feel like campaign season here in New Hampshire, even though we have a primary election a little more than just 2 months from now. On September 8th, voters will choose party nominees for the general election in November, and this year features several competitive primaries in key races. On the Democratic side, two well-known politicians from Concord both want to be their party's gubernatorial nominee, and Republicans have robust primaries in our two congressional districts and for the U.S. Senate. Today in The Exchange, who's running, what they're saying, and how all the candidates are struggling for public attention, which has been focused on a pandemic and a national reckoning on race. Let's hear from you, Exchange listeners. Our email, exchange@nhpr.org. Once again, exchange@nhpr.org. Our phone number is 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-6477. We have three guests for the hour joining us: Andy Smith, director of the UNH Survey Center and a professor of practice in political science. Also, Anna Brown, director of research and analysis at Citizens Count. And Josh Rogers, NHPR's senior political reporter. And welcome, all of you. And Josh, I want to start with you, but hear from everybody. How are these candidates, Josh, making their names known, their voices heard, given all the other issues that are in front of voters right now?
Well, they're taking to social media to the extent that they can. They're also, they're muddling through. This isn't a moment when there are good ways to get above the noise regarding COVID, the politics out of Washington, and certainly, as you mentioned, the national reckoning on racial issues. So, you know, it remains to be seen how well any of them are going to pierce through all that.
Yeah, social media, they're using that. Josh, have they had sort of events with voters? I mean, it's kind of tricky, isn't it?
There have been some events with voters. There were, over the weekend, some Republican candidates, Corky Messner, who's running for U.S. Senate, Matt Maurer, who's running the 1st Congressional District, participated in the opening of the Trump election headquarters in Manchester alongside Corey Lewandowski. There have been meet and greets to some extent. I mean, a lot of it's been virtual.
Yeah. Well, and I saw some pictures from that Trump campaign opening this weekend. And you're right, there were a couple candidates there and people holding signs and so forth. Anna, what are you seeing in terms of these primary candidates' abilities to get out and about?
Well, as Dan said, it's very much a sort of remote environment now. We are seeing Zoom town halls, Facebook Live events. I think the challenge for a lot of these candidates is people don't necessarily engage the same way digitally as they do face-to-face. On the other hand, I think that this could be a moment of opportunity potentially for some candidates that otherwise might have trouble getting around the state, getting as much attention. The digital profile tends to be very sort of an even playing ground for people.
Interesting. Give us a little bit more on that, Anna, because there's also the flip side, you know, Zoom fatigue. A lot of us are on our computers all day long, so maybe the last thing we want to do at night is attend a Zoom function. So I'd love your thoughts on that, Anna.
Yes, well, it's different styles, and it is true that we're all a little zoomed out at this point, I think. But on the other hand, it's very easy to sit on your couch and join a call as opposed to get in your car and go to an event, although I'm sure a lot of us would like that change of pace right now.
Yeah, well, that's interesting. And Andy, I'd love to hear from you, too, on this, how you see candidates kind of working in this unprecedented environment.
Well, I think it's really important to remember that it's kind of like aphorisms I give to students, that most people don't care about politics most of the time. They will when the election comes around. So by the time we get to November, people will be paying attention. But I think when you're talking about primaries in general, state primaries in New Hampshire, it's a very small group of people. We have high turnout in presidential elections, but in our state primaries, it's typically 15 to 20% turnout. So it's really just the activists that these guys have to talk to. They really don't have to talk to the general public. But that means it's very, it's difficult for people to estimate what's going on, as it's hard to find those people who are actually going to vote. But as Anna said, they are the ones who might join a Zoom call or a phone call by phone, but you're just not going to be able to get some of the other people that you might want to bring into the political environment. It's going to be harder to get a hold of those people.
Wow. Andy, give us those numbers again, please. So, you know, relating to most people don't care about politics most of the time. So what did you say? 15 to 20% of Granite State voters will vote in these state primaries?
In 2016, the last presidential year that we had a primary, and remember, in a presidential year, it's the presidential election really swamps everything else. But it was only 21% turnout in 2016. In the midterm of 2018 year, in the midterm year, our state turnout was only 24%. And that was high because we had a couple competitive races there. But, you know, typically turnout is really low in state primaries.
Well, and again, I want to remind listeners, we're talking about primaries. So again, this is where the parties pick their nominees to be the gubernatorial nominee or the U.S. Senate nominee in the general election. So we're talking about party primaries right now. Still, we've got a robust primary on the Democratic side for governor and robust primaries on the Republican side for both congressional seats and the U.S. Senate seat. Andy, to you first, but Anna, I want to hear from you too. Andy, how do you see in general, again, in terms of campaigning in this difficult environment, how do you see New Hampshire Republican candidates doing it differently than the Democrats?
At the Senate level, I think you see the greatest amount of difference, where you've got the presidential campaign more directly impacting that primary than what you're seeing in some of the other races. Trump getting behind Corky Messner, I think, is something that has driven the media coverage of this, as well as people's thinking about it, because now it's like a pro-Trump, anti-Trump election, as well as the other thing I think that happened on the Republican side that's different, that just makes campaigning different, is the involvement of the party itself. And it seems that there's a lot of concern by the Baldock people that the National Republican Party has got its thumb on the scale for Corky Messner here, which is historically just not been the case. So I think the interjection of national politics into that race is the biggest difference that I see across all of the other ones. On the Democratic side, having Sununu as governor to run against is their biggest problem. So they're having to run against Sununu, who's now quite popular, who seemed to be doing a really good job on the major issue of the day, and that is the pandemic. So they're having to kind of play almost like second fiddle to say me too, when the media are talking about the governor, because you've got the governor deeply involved in day-to-day public management of a very difficult crisis.
Well, the governor himself addressed that, not saying, you know, I'm above it all, but he did say earlier at one of his regular briefings about how the coronavirus response really has been just his main focus right now, to the point where he really hasn't been able to think about his reelection campaign, campaigning in general. He said he hasn't been actively campaigning yet, but he did say he thinks this election season will be very different. Let's hear.
Everyone else has been out there campaigning all along through this whole COVID process. I have not. I guess you could go back and look at how they've been doing it. I don't know. I've been a little busy, frankly. It'll look a little different. If you just take the fact that as someone who traditionally loves to do a parade, there'll be very few parades. Most of them have been canceled on their own already. There'll be very few fairs. We love going to the fairs and meeting people and saying hi and, you know, shaking hands and all, and taking pictures and all that kind of stuff. My guess is there'll be very, very few of those. Those communities are actively choosing not to do that. I think the whole campaign will look a little different. I think there's going to be a little hesitation on doing things like door-to-door coming to, you know, the turkey suppers and things of that nature. You just have to, they can happen, but they have to happen a little different, with a little more spaces and distancing. But I haven't even started my campaign yet, so I can't answer for myself. I guess you just have to look at how other people have been trying to do it.
Well, and again, that's Governor Sununu talking about this very different campaign year. And Exchange listeners, today on The Exchange, we are looking at the September 8th primaries. Again, this is where the parties choose their nominees for the general election in November. And we'd love your questions about what's going on in the Democratic primary for governor or in the Republican primaries for Congressional District 1, Congressional District 2, and U.S. Senate. Again, our number for you to join us is 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org. Once again, exchange@nhpr.org. And I'd love your thoughts too about what we just heard from the governor there. You know, no more turkey suppers, but we're doing what we can.
Sure. Well, I thought it was interesting to look at his actual fundraising numbers compared to 2018. And it is true that he's raised just a little bit more than half of what he did at this time last year. So if you look at those first couple months of 2020 compared to the first couple months of 2018, he was doing way more fundraising in 2018. So the numbers really do bear out that he has not been out there campaigning. But on the other hand, he is in the news all the time. I mean, whether people are happy with how he's handling the pandemic or unhappy about how he's handled the pandemic, he's having multiple press conferences a week where he's getting that press coverage. So I think that it is sort of a boon to his opponents, perhaps. We saw Dan Feltes raised more than he did so far, more than Sununu so far in 2020. But on the other hand, it is hard to sort of say, as you pointed out, me too, I have things to say. And Dan Feltes in particular, while the legislature was out of session due to the pandemic, was having to come up with his own response plan and saying, well, this is what I would do related to coronavirus. And sometimes it would be he would announce, oh, we should do this in terms of expanding unemployment. And then Sununu would announce the exact idea a few days later, and it would sort of steal that moment. So I think that it's definitely the pandemic can be a pro or a con if you're Sununu or Feltes or Valinsky, depending on how you're looking at it.
Well, that's really interesting, and I'm glad you mentioned that, Anda. And Andy, to you too, how do you hear these candidates, whether in the governor's race or some of the other races, talking about what their approach would be toward combating this pandemic, towards getting us, wouldn't that be nice, back to normal?
That is, I think, the biggest problem, because it, to my original point, is that the other candidates are largely speaking into the wind here, because if they can say what they want, but if nobody's there to listen, it doesn't really matter much now. So I think that that for both of them, I think the problem that they face is the news coverage that they've got about what their response to the pandemic would be is either the lawsuit on spending against the governor's office and how federal funding would be spent, which then again means it's not a proactive response. It's not saying this is what I would do. And I think even if they would say this is what I would do, it would be this is what I would do differently than Governor Sununu is doing. And right now, as far as our polling is showing, people are happy with the way Governor Sununu is handling things.
Yeah, so that makes it problematic for the Democratic candidates. It's nice for the Republican candidates, isn't it, Andy? They can say, hey, our Republican governor's doing a good job, according to your surveys anyway, Andy.
Well, yeah, and the other advantage that it has that the Republicans have out of this is that Sununu is doing well, even when Trump is unpopular. Even he's losing some popularity among Republicans in the state. So Sununu is in a good position in this race, because not only does he not have a challenger in the primary, but he's been able to separate himself from the Trump administration, which is not popular in New Hampshire. And that makes it more difficult for Democrats to tie him to Trump and how Trump has handled the COVID crisis.
Well, and Josh, Governor Sununu does have a challenge from someone who does not like his approach toward the pandemic, even though Andy tells us his surveys show most Granite Staters think the governor is doing a good job with this. So Karen Testerman, just remind us, Josh, who she is and what her criticism of the governor is, to the point where she's launched a primary challenge.
Well, Karen Testerman's a longtime conservative activist. She's run for governor before. She's run for other things. Certainly there are a lot of Republicans who felt that Governor Sununu had shut down too much of the economy, had restricted people's personal liberties too much. Whether Karen Testerman is a compelling messenger for that message at this point, when a lot of things have reopened, and you know, there's not much of a challenge, to be blunt.
And
I mean, it's not going to pose a challenge to Governor Sununu. Polling would indicate that you know, as Andy said, I mean, if you've got so many people who are generally satisfied with his treatment of COVID-19, the idea that you're going to mount a campaign challenging him on that very ground, when, you know, north of 80% of people, regardless of party ID, think he's done a reasonable job, is going to be tough sledding, which isn't to say that there aren't, you know, a portion of the Republican Party who disagrees with the governor on some of the restrictions he's imposed. But, you know, there's little to indicate that it's a significant number or that Karen Testerman would be a significant challenge.
And I'm curious, Josh, how you hear other candidates, again, whether the Republicans running for Congress and U.S. Senate or the Democrats, how do you hear candidates kind of threading the needle on this, Josh? Because they don't want to be the doom and gloom candidate, but they do want to talk about the realities here. Also, knowledge of this virus, as you know, is ever-changing. So you don't want to say something now that sounds ridiculous a month from now because things are changing so much. So how do you hear candidates, Josh, kind of working around this issue?
Well, I mean, one thing that I think in the governor's case that he's been wise to do is to say that, you know, I'm making these recommendations now, but they could always change if the situations on the ground change. And, you know, I think it's made him appear responsive in a way where he doesn't seem so dogmatic about, you know, pursuing an ideological agenda on this. And, you know, for other candidates, you know, to Andy's point earlier, I mean, the Democrats running for governor, a lot of their complaints, even if they're substantive, are going to come off as sort of process-oriented, like the governor's not being transparent enough about the spending that the emergency powers indicate that he has to make, or that, you know, he's not doing enough on nursing homes. That's a criticism that Majority Leader Feltes has made to try to differentiate himself from Sununu. But, you know, this is tough. And, you know, we don't know what the situation is going to be on the ground, you know, during the primary, the general election. And that is something that, you know, while the polls indicate that Governor Sununu is popular, his handling of the coronavirus has been popular right now. If down the line something were to be revealed that, you know, a policy misstep, you know, it's hard to know where this goes. And I think everybody running for office recognizes that.
We've got a couple emails from listeners who are kind of reacting to what you said earlier, Andy, about people just aren't paying attention right now, and there's not a lot of participation typically in these primary races, no matter what the year. Christopher from Manchester writes, as we've been told, elections have consequences at a time when everything seems to be political and young folks in particular seem determined to enact immediate change in so many realms of society. Christopher asks, wouldn't one assume this would translate to unprecedented turnout in the September 2020 primary? Christopher, great question. Thank you for writing in. And Andy, what do you think?
Well, first off, let me just go back to one of the things that Christopher says about young people. We've been hearing about young people and how their turnout is going to make a huge impact on elections since they were 18 to 21, 20 year olds were given the vote in 1972. And it really hasn't happened. I'm sure Christopher has maybe a lot of friends that he sees that are very active politically, but by and large, younger people have a lot of other things to worry about than politics. And certainly now in these times with inability to have jobs to a great extent, that makes it even more difficult for them to live their lives regularly, you know, college online, et cetera. So I think that there are in people's lives, there are so many other things that are more important than politics that we have to just keep that in mind. This year, it is a presidential year. There typically is more attention to the politics in general in a general election year, but that actually reduces interest in state politics somewhat because everybody is focusing what little bandwidth they have on politics on the presidential race, and the other races tend to fly under the radar.
Very interesting. And Anna, to you, what impact do you see the sort of looming presidential contest having on the state primaries right now?
Well, I definitely think that we've seen the partisanship of Washington trickle down to the state level, particularly in the legislature. We've seen far more contentious voting than in any time in the past. I did a study last year on one measure the partisanship, the party unity score, and it was at a 20-year high, and that is borne through this year. And of course, we saw legislative activity basically break down in the House because Republicans and Democrats couldn't agree on rules changes to allow some priorities to go through. And so I see that also happening now in the state contests in terms of people are associating their opponents either with Trump, if you're, you know, Democrats are looking at Republicans and saying they're part of this Trump movement. And then you have Republicans on the other side frequently associating their opponents with Nancy Pelosi, sort of is the big bad name that they like to pull out a lot. And I think that it's a little bit of a shame in terms of we're losing that unique New Hampshire streak. But on the other hand, every year in the New Hampshire legislature, every time there's an election, we see about one third of new candidates coming in and changing over. So there's always a chance for a big change.
Well, and an email from Megan from Gilmanton relates to what we were talking about, how, you know, people just haven't paid that much attention and the campaigns have seem to be sort of quiet, just given, again, some of the restraints that are on them these days. Megan says, as a normally active member of the Democratic Party, I have no clue who is running for any of the New Hampshire political offices, with the exception of the incumbents. Megan says, it's been disconcerting, and I'm wondering if these challenger candidates are going to ramp up their campaigns into overdrive in the upcoming months with the state reopening. And Megan, after the break, we're going to talk about who's running in what races. But for now, Josh Rogers, what's your sense of whether some of these challenges are going to ramp up in the summer?
Well, I'm sure they're going to try to do more and, you know, to sort of jumping off of something that Andy said about how, you know, presidential politics takes up a lot of people's bandwidth, available bandwidth for politics. You know, it's definitely true that, you know, even if people like Megan don't know who's running, you know, history would indicate that presidential years tend to be good for Democrats in New Hampshire. You know, excepting Governor Sununu's victory in 2016 over Colin Van Ostern, you have to go back to 1992 to find a Republican who won the governor's race in a presidential year in New Hampshire. And that's something that, you know, people in both parties are keenly aware of. Democrats see this as a way that they can turn out voters, and they would tell you that, you know, interest among candidates is high. They have more, according to them, more people filed for offices up and down the ticket than ever before. And, you know, just something as mundane seeming as this, getting a, you know, a name and a warm body on the ballot often is quite helpful when it comes to when the votes are counted. I mean, having more people on the ticket means you have a greater possibility of your party getting elected. And in a presidential year, you know, a lot may flow from the top of the ticket. And, you know, to the extent that somebody like Governor Sununu may have been able to put Trump a bit more at arm's length than Democrats might like, you know, might help him survive in a situation if there's a real Trump free fall. But, you know, a lot of this is going to flow from the top of the ticket in this year, and who's ever, you know, wherever you stand, is going to, you're going to be either swept along or potentially sunk by what happens there.
Well, Megan and Christopher, thank you for the emails. And after a short break, we'll take more of your emails and your calls. Our phone number is 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. And as we talk about these primary candidates, I want to let listeners know that, of course, the Exchange will be setting up interviews with them this summer, as we always do, so that you can hear from the candidates directly to get that information that Megan says she wants. Coming up, we'll check in on the Democratic primary race for governor and the action among Republicans in the congressional districts and the U.S. Senate. So stay with us. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. New Hampshire has a primary election about 2 months from now, and so today we're finding out who's running in these competitions to be the party nominees for governor, two U.S. House seats, and one U.S. Senate seat. We've been asking how candidates have been campaigning with the confines of COVID-19 and with heightened attention on racial justice in our state. And Exchange listeners, as always, we'd love to hear from you. Send us an email with your questions about who's running in some of these primary races or what some of the issues are. It's exchange@nhpr.org. Once again, exchange@nhpr.org. Use Facebook or call in 1-800 8926477. We're talking with Josh Rogers, NHPR's senior political reporter, Anna Brown, director of research and analysis at Citizens Count, and Andy Smith, director of the UNH Survey Center and a professor of practice in political science. And before we get into the sort of who's who in these primary races, I did have one more broad question for all of you. And Anna, I want to start with you. In addition to the pandemic, candidates have also had to talk about how they'd tackle ongoing racism in society broadly, and more specifically about police practices. So what broad themes have you heard from these candidates, Anna?
This has become a huge issue over the past couple of weeks, particularly in the gubernatorial race. So Governor Chris Sununu put together a commission on policing. Also, shortly after the tragic death of George Floyd, he brought that up in a press conference almost immediately before being prompted by a question. So he's been on top of this issue, certainly insofar as he's been in front of the press and having these press conferences weekly. Dan Feltes in the Senate, he's been a little involved in a bill that would reform policing practices, for example, to ban chokeholds, that passed the Senate and is making its way through the House. And then Andrew Valinsky, unfortunately, has been in a bit of the hot seat lately. The executive council had two different nominees who were Black men. One was for the State Board of Education, Andrew Terrell, and the other was to be the director of the Office of Professional Licensure and Certification, Eddie Edwards, himself a former candidate for Congress. And Andrew Valinsky in both cases said they were unqualified. And it ended up being a conversation about race in relation to these hearings. Eddie Edwards then came out with a pretty scathing letter that said that there was political racism going on. So Andrew Valinsky has issued an apology about the way that he talked about these nominees. And Republicans have jumped on it pretty fast in terms of saying that Andrew Valinsky basically, you know, despite what he says about having, you know, he wants to be involved in police reforms and has more diversity, that he has not been involved positively in moving diversity forward. So each of the three candidates has definitely been touching on these issues in their own way.
Andy, how do you hear Republican primary candidates talking about this year?
I think that they're in a difficult spot this year because, again, the president has been a real lightning rod in the discussions of race and in the Black Lives Matter movement. So the governor is certainly in the position more from the state level. Most police activity is governed by what goes on in the state. And I think to Anna's point, Sununu probably did himself a lot of favors by getting out ahead of this issue. And kind of taking it on rather than being defensive and not being defensive of the president. In the other races, in the national races for Senate and for congressional districts, it's going to be a little bit harder. But I think that Republicans who get out in front of this, you know, it's a positive thing to do.
Well, and on this issue, systemic racism broadly, but also police practices more specifically, one candidate, a Republican running in the first congressional district, Matt Maurer, he's a former executive director of the New Hampshire Republican Party, former Trump administration official. He produced this video for Twitter last month describing his support for New Hampshire police. Let's hear.
This week is Police Appreciation Week, so we dropped off some sandwiches at the Belknap County Sheriff's Office just now. If you see any law enforcement officer out there, local police officer, sheriff's officer, county correctional facility officer, go up to them and say thanks. We should be thanking them year round for what they do for us on the front lines every day. But especially this week, we can show them some extra appreciation. So thanks for all that you do and hope to see you soon.
And also on his Twitter feed, Matt Maurer said that Chris Pappas, the current congressman, needs to, quote, fight back on the left's war on cops. So Josh Rogers, this is a toughie, you know, sort of showing support for police among these Republican candidates, but also they don't want to look like, you know, they're not in favor of improving the status of Black people in our country.
Well, I mean, I guess it depends on how you look at that. I mean, a lot of Matt Maurer's has been pretty adamant about, you know, embracing the totality of Donald Trump, including, you know, some of his potentially more divisive moments. And, you know, he's touting his endorsement by President Trump, by Donald Trump Jr. You know, and obviously, if you're going to get through a Republican primary, that may not be a bad approach. You know, a lot of the Republican candidates showed up. There was a support law enforcement rally at the State House recently. A lot of the Republican candidates running in primaries attended that. And, you know, that's not shocking given the demographics of who would be attending that rally. And, you know, to point, Governor Sununu, you know, has did sort of get out in front of this issue. And, you know, he would point to a record of, you know, creating a civil rights division at the Attorney General's office, of, you know, having a diversity panel, you know, of a task force, you know, that he set up more than a year ago. And, you know, he was, as Anna said, I think quite emphatic about, you know, talking about how the Black Lives Matter messaging in New Hampshire was the right message at the right time. He included a member of Black Lives Matter Manchester. He added to his policing oversight commission. He also added Eddie Edwards, the person whose nomination was withdrawn. You know, and you know, while you know, Democrats would say, and I think rightly, that that, you know, Governor Sununu saw the turning down of these nominees, Ryan Terrell for the Board of Education, and, you know, the stalling of a hearing on Eddie Edwards as an opportunity to put Democrats on the defensive. I mean, his office released the scathing letter that Eddie Edwards wrote about the council, alleging structural political racism in New Hampshire. And Sununu's staffers were, you know, active on social media, kind of taunting Andrew Walensky in the wake of his comments about, you know, the nominees being unqualified. And, you know, he's, Walensky subsequently apologized for that. But in his initial, you know, in that statement, he also pointed out that he's pretty much called every Sununu nominee unqualified, which, you know, in my experience covering the council, is accurate. But, you know, in the Democratic primary, Andrew Walensky sort of put himself in a hole. The Black Lives Matter activists in Manchester and Nashua have both been pretty damning about what he said, and that essentially by referring to, you know, black male nominees as unqualified, it's essentially, you know, a racist dog whistle. And, and, you know, to the degree to which Black Lives Matter politics have become a potent force in New Hampshire is interesting. I mean, I don't think any of us would have anticipated some months ago that one of the main critiques Republicans are making of, you know, liberal Democrat Andrew Walensky would be that he's racist.
Well, and let's talk about these two Democratic candidates since we're going there, and, you know, give listeners the information that they need to know about this Democratic gubernatorial primary. So Andrew Walensky and the other candidate, Dan Feltes, state senator from Concord and the Senate majority leader. Beyond that, I think I'll turn to you first, Andy, but anybody jump in. Beyond that sort of quick political sketch, executive counselor, prominent state senator, what else, Andy, do you think is important to know about these two gentlemen from Concord?
Certainly, Andrew Walensky has a longer record here in New Hampshire with his activity with the Claremont case, being one of the lead attorneys on the Claremont educational decisions. And he's been very much kind of a liberal activist within the state. Dan Feltes is a New Hampshire guy that left the state for college, came back, and he's in Concord, and he's been working in politics angling towards politics throughout his life. I think he's the youngest president of the Senate in New Hampshire history. So he's a certainly young and upcoming person. The downside both of these guys have is that they're just not known among the public. When you look at the whether or not the people know these guys, less than 10% have favorable ratings of either Feltes or Walensky, largely because they're unknown. You've got approximately two-thirds of the state have no idea who either of these candidates are. And that's the biggest challenge that they're going to face in this election, is really getting themselves known and creating an image for themselves before either Sununu does or before their opponent in the primary does.
Well, let's hear a little bit. We pulled a lot of audio from campaign ads that these primary candidates are putting out there, whether, as you remind us, Andy, the public is paying attention or not. But let's hear a little bit from an Andrew Walensky campaign ad, and just helps us understand how he's presenting himself.
Believe it or not, when I was a kid, I wanted to be a football player. I didn't care that I was always the smallest kid on the field. I understand what it's like to be the underdog. That's why I fought for fair school funding in the 90s. It's why I've stayed involved, and it's why I ran for the executive council. Now I want to take that spirit to the governor's office. I want to create jobs.
Again, that's an ad for Andrew Walensky running for governor on the Democratic side. It's a pretty competitive primary between Mr. Walensky and Senator Feltes. And so let's hear a little bit from Senator Feltes's campaign ad. He's going to emphasize his working class roots and his lack of political lineage. The implication is made to Governor Sununu. Let's hear.
Working as a legal aid lawyer, I came to realize that the laws weren't written with working people in mind. So I decided to run for state senate. Most of the political insiders gave me zero chance. I wasn't born into a family of politicians. My dad wasn't governor. I was born into a family of workers. That's what I know. So that's what we did. We worked it. I said if we win...
Again, ads from Dan Feltes, state senator, and from executive counselor Andrew Walensky a little bit earlier. Again, we'd love to hear from you, Exchange listeners, what questions you have about these primaries that are going on. The New Hampshire primary is coming up on September 8th, so not that far away. But as we've been saying, it's been hard for candidates to get their messages out there. You can join us with your questions at 1-800-892-6477 or email exchange@nhpr.org. And Josh, last question for you on the governor's race, and then I do want to turn to the U.S. Senate race and the congressional races. But who is tending to give these two Democratic candidates, Josh, money? Because that kind of gives you an indication of what kind of voters will be attracted to these two. So what kind of people are giving to the Walensky campaign, first of all, Josh?
There are a lot of progressives. I mean, a lot of small donors. The Walensky campaign would say that they have a record number of small donors. They're not taking corporate money or money from political action committees. It sort of runs the gamut. I mean, there are plenty of Democrats who have given to both Feltes and Walensky. But if you're looking for distinctions, Feltes has got a lot of money from unions. And part of that reason is that he hasn't ruled out things like pipelines, natural gas pipelines, to the extent that Andrew Walensky has. Feltes has been semi-publicly running for longer than Walensky, and he's majority leader in the state senate, and a lot of the bills he's been sponsoring, maybe things he's believed are things he believes in, certainly, but there are also things that he was hoping, this year, to draw a real contrast with Governor Sununu. But a big distinction between them is also Feltes has taken the traditional pledge to veto a sales or income tax. Andrew Walensky's campaign is explicitly rejecting that idea. And so, Walensky's going for more kind of progressives of a certain age. I mean, he was tight with Sanders. There are a lot of old time liberals who like Walensky. There are young people who like his activism on climate matters and connections with Bernie Sanders, and that's reflected in the campaign filings. And, Feltes has got more money, and Walensky also threw in $26,000 of his own money so far, something that the Feltes campaign claimed amounted to Walensky self-funding his campaign, which is a bit overstating things. But those are what you can see in their campaign filings thus far.
Well, let's turn briefly to the Republican primary for U.S. Senate. And Anna, I'll start with you. Two Republicans competing for the chance to be the nominee to run against U.S. Senator Jeanne Shaheen, Don Bolduc and Corky Messner. And one of you mentioned earlier that Corky Messner has the endorsement of President Trump. I think it was Andy who said it's kind of unusual for the party to step in so early in a primary. But can you give us, Anna, please, just a brief bio of each of these men, Anna?
Sure. So Don Bolduc is actually a brigadier general in the U.S. Army. He is a hero, really. He had an incredible career in the military. He rode on horseback in Afghanistan, and he has come back, and part of his real issue has been the way the VA is operated and, of course, all the problems that we know are there. He's well known for having a service dog that, if I remember correctly, has its own Twitter account, possibly. It's a big part of how he presents himself in terms of saying that this is okay and we need to take care of our wounded warriors, and whether those wounds are physical or mental or what have you. And so he is definitely coming in as an outsider and as someone who is passionate about this VA issue in particular, but also in general about correcting corruption in Washington and sort of not being part of that machine that has not worked so well. Bryant Corky Messner is also a veteran, but he's more of a businessman. He's more of a part of the political establishment, if you will, in New Hampshire, although he will position himself as an outsider because he has not held political office before. And as we've noted, the big difference here is that he did get that endorsement very early on. And so most recently, the debate between the two candidates has been less about the issues and more about which one really is the insider and which one really is the outsider.
Interesting. Well, again, these may be new names to Granite Staters, but they will be getting out there. They have been getting out there. They will be getting out there more over the summer. Let's hear just a little bit from some of their campaigning. This is a clip from Don Bolduc. He, as you said, Anna, is really emphasizing his military experience. Let's hear Don Bolduc.
I am here for a job interview to be your United States Senator.
General Don Bolduc, 10 tours of duty, 5 Bronze Stars, 2 Purple Hearts.
You can't go from private to general unless you know how to get along with people. The partisanship that we're seeing today, self-service, not selfless service. This isn't what leaders do, and we need to change that. Woo! Washington, D.C.
So again, that's a clip from Don Bolduc. He's a retired brigadier general running in the Republican primary for U.S. Senate. And let's hear a little bit from Corky Messner. His campaign is focused more on his private sector experience. And he released this ad soon after President Trump announced his endorsement for Messner's U.S. Senate bid. Let's hear.
Small businesses are the backbone of New Hampshire's economy, and they are getting back to work safely, thanks to President Trump and Governor Sununu. I built a business from scratch. I know the challenges you're facing. We need to bring back the economy so our families can preserve the American dream. DC
politicians. Again, that's a clip from an ad from Corky Messner running in the Republican primary for U.S. Senate. And before we head into a break, I did want to ask you, Andy Smith, what are Republican voters looking for in their U.S. Senate nominee, besides obviously someone they hope can beat Jeanne Shaheen? What's going to help a Republican in this race, Andy?
That's a good question, because Republicans are going to, looking at the top of the ticket, Republicans are still backing Trump, but I think that support is weakening somewhat. So I think the Trump can't nominee or the Trump candidate is going to be effective in a primary where turnout's low, but in a general election, it's going to, I think it would be possibly even a counterproductive thing for Republicans to be in. So that steering that line between the Republican Party and Donald Trump is the biggest problem that they've got. And I think that's what Republican voters are really looking at, is that they're backing Trump, but it's more like they're backing him because he's the guy who's the head of their team, not necessarily because they agree with all of these things. And the Trump shadow or the Trump umbrella over the Republican race for pretty much every office, and maybe the exception of governor, is going to be the thing that the Republican candidates are going to have to deal with.
All right. Well, coming up, more of your questions and comments. Keep those emails coming at exchange@nhpr.org. Also, we'll touch on Republican primaries in our 2 congressional districts, and we'll take a quick peek at the Executive Council. So keep it right here. This is The Exchange on NHPR. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. New Hampshire's upcoming primary election on September 8th is our topic today, where voters will choose party nominees for offices, including governor, 2 U.S. House seats, 1 U.S. Senate seat. This hour, we've been finding out who's running, what they're saying, and how the candidates are struggling for public attention given all that is going on these days and the restrictions of the ongoing pandemic. Exchange listeners, we'd love to hear your questions. Our email, exchange@nhpr.org. Whether you have questions broadly about how these races are playing out or some specifics on some of these specific primaries we've been talking about, we welcome your comments and questions at exchange@nhpr.org or with phone call 1-800-892-6477. Helping us out this hour, Anna Brown, Director of Research and Analysis at Citizens Count, Josh Rogers, NHPR's Senior Political Reporter, and Andy Smith, Director of the UNH Survey Center and a Professor of Practice in Political Science. And here's an email from John in Acworth, who says, I'm curious about Executive Council races. Will The Exchange touch on these today? And John, yes, thank you for writing. We do want to touch on them. And Josh, for you first, we do this every single time, Josh, but you got to remind us just very briefly what the Executive Council is and how it's played an increasing role in sort of creating a field of potential statewide politicians.
Well, the Executive Council's role, they like to call themselves the sort of board of directors of state government. They approve state contracts. They authorize the expenditure of money on those contracts. They confirm or reject nominations made by governors to high state posts. And they're also, you know, act as kind of a sounding board for communities. There are five of them. Massachusetts, I believe, is the only other state that has some form of executive council, although their powers are much more limited than the executive council here. There are five of them. It's historically, you know, lately it's become more of a stepping stone, seemingly, than it has been in the past. Although Judd Gregg served on the executive council before moving on to Congress and governor and senator, but we've seen Colin Van Ostrand run from the executive council. We've obviously seen Governor Sununu get elected governor after serving a couple terms from the executive council. And now Andrew Walensky's doing that as well. And with him leaving the council, District 2, which is a heavily gerrymandered district that creates kind of a Democratic block that actually runs east to west across the state. And so the primary in that race is effectively the general election. It's almost impossible to imagine a Republican winning that district. That's one of the open seats in District 3, which is the Seacoast seat. Russ Prescott is retiring. That creates an opening there. And, you know, there's an interesting Republican primary in District 5, which is the seat that includes Nashua, where current Councillor Deborah Pignatelli is the incumbent. The Republican primary features David Wheeler, who used to be a holder of that seat, conservative, and Bob Clegg, former Senate Majority Leader, Republican. That certainly will be an interesting primary to watch. And the District 2 primary on the Democratic side featuring lawyer Cindy Warmington. She works at Shaheen and Gordon, has been active in healthcare matters. Jay Sertakowski is also a lawyer. Leah Plunkett, who is dean at the UNH School of Law, and Emmett Soldati, who runs a teetotaler tea emporia out of Somersworth. And that's an interesting cast of characters. And again, whoever wins that is all but certain to become the executive council. And for Russ Prescott, the Democratic primary there is, I mean, we have Mindy Mesmer running on a Republican primary that, as far as I know, it's Janet Stevens of Rye and Bruce Crotchetier, who's a businessman who lives in Stratham.
Wow, there is a lot there, Josh. I had no idea. So some real...
There may be more that I'm missing, but... You know,
sure. Well, and it's interesting because, as you said, we have seen in recent years the Executive Council become more of a stepping stone to higher political office than this sort of like, what is that?
Well, it's not a bad way. You certainly get your name out. You learn how government works, and you're also not voting on issues. So it's easy to kind of potentially shape your own identity from that seat than it would be coming out of the legislature.
Well, John, I'm glad you wrote in. Thank you for your email. You can email us at exchange@nhpr.org. And all of you, I feel bad. We don't have that much time left. And I did want to dig into a little bit more about the second congressional district. We've got two names that have been out there before, Lynn Blankenbecker and Steve Negron. And Anna, just remind us who these candidates are. They have both been on New Hampshire's political stage for a while.
Sure. So Lynn Blankenbecker is a captain in the Navy Reserve. She's a nurse, she's an attorney. She did serve briefly in the State House of Representatives. Most recently during her campaign, she was deployed for a little while related to the coronavirus pandemic. So that sort of put her campaign on hold for a little bit. She did run in 2018. She did not win the primary. So that's gonna be a familiar name. And then Steve Negron did also run in 2018. He was the nominee. He did lose. He was also a former state representative. He did also serve in the past in the U.S. Air Force. So both of these candidates have a little bit of an uphill battle going against Rep. Ann McLean Custer because she has been serving for many years now, I believe a decade, and she also has an incredible fundraising chest. So I look at both of these candidates and, you know, they're running again. They're running against Custer because they both profoundly want to serve. You know, they've both served in the military. They've both served in the State House of Representatives. And I believe, you know, that for them, this is not necessarily a political calculation. It's a deep desire to run.
Well, and as you said, Steve Negron was the nominee last time. I want to play a little bit from Republican 2nd District candidate Negron telling WMUR as he launched his second attempt that he learned some lessons from his last campaign against Custer. Let's hear.
One of the things that we did realize is that, you know, name recognition was a big deal for us the last time. And I think, you know, we'd look where we were and how we finished, and that's our starting point this time. And we need to look at those issues that are really that go and they transcend all parties. You know, we have to look at those things like national debt. We talked about that during the campaign last time. You know, I'm hearing a lot of rhetoric from D.C. We don't hear anything about that. Student debt is another thing that's out there. You know, I have a daughter who's a sophomore in college. So it's very, it's in the front of our minds and our household to do those things. So we need to make sure that we address issues that affect everybody and not just one party or the other. And I think that's where we have to do a better job this time.
And again, that's Steve Negron. He was the nominee last time for the 2nd Congressional District. He's making a go of it again. And Andy, real quick to you, how would you describe the political character in general of 2nd District Republicans as they face this decision between Lynn Blankenbecker and Steve Negron?
Well, I think we should say first off that the 2nd District is the more Democratic of the two districts. It's going to be very, very difficult for any Republican to win, in particular, as Josh said at the top of the show, in a presidential year where Democrats have, since the 1990s, done better than Republicans. So that's the starting point. The problem that I think a lot of people have across the state, but particularly in the 2nd District, is you've got two Republican parties. You do have kind of the old mainstream, more liberal-ish Republican Party, kind of the Yankee Republicans, Rockefeller Republicans. But the Republican Party has been becoming here and across the country much more of the blue-collar party. And the blue-collar party was the part that got Trump elected. So it's that conflict again between the older Yankee Republicans, businessman Republicans, and the kind of the Trumpian Republicans, that's going to be the bigger problem. And the motivation for those two camps is going to be the determinant, in my view, of who wins in this nomination on the Republican side.
So that's the 2nd Congressional District, Republican primary there. One of those two hoping to get the chance to go up against Democratic incumbent Congresswoman Ann McClain Custer. Josh Rogers, real quickly, let's talk about the 1st Congressional District. Again, you have a Democratic incumbent, Chris Pappas. Who are the two Republican candidates reaching out to voters in the 1st District? Two men named Matt, right, Josh?
Indeed. Matt Mayberry, who is a former vice chairman of the state Republican Party, former Dover School Board member, certainly somebody who's been around New Hampshire politics for some time. He's been an impresario promoting gun shows. He's worked for some years for Bill Binney, who ran for U.S. Senate in various capacities. He's been active in the Log Cabin Republicans. He's certainly somebody who is well known among people who are going to vote in a Republican primary. And so, and on the other side, it's Matt Mowers, who, you know, has been endorsed by President Trump. He's 30 years old, although he does have a pretty long political resume for somebody of that age. He's from New Jersey. He worked for Chris Christie there as a political aide. He moved here for a political job with the New Hampshire GOP to be the executive director, and frankly, also to be kind of setting the stage for Chris Christie's presidential campaign, which at the time, you know, Matt Mowers moved here was perceived to be a, you know, potentially truly going concern. You know, he then joined the Trump, worked on the Trump campaign, went to D.C., joined the administration, and, you know, worked as a liaison to the State Department. One of his roles was as a chief of staff to Dr. Deborah Birx, who's obviously now involved with the White House coronavirus response. And, you know, oddly enough, in the early moments of Don Baldock's campaign, Matt Mowers was actually one of his political advisors.
Oh, that's interesting.
So,
well, yeah,
we'll see. I mean, you know, as Anna mentioned earlier, you know, so far what we're hearing out of, you know, Mowers and Mayberry is a lot that, you know, kind of Chris Pappas is out of touch. Chris Pappas is essentially Nancy Pelosi. You know, this primary is interesting. Mowers is certainly playing up his connections with the Trump administration, the Trump family. But a lot of people know Matt Mayberry, who will be voting this primary.
And as we talk about these primary candidates, again, I want to let Exchange listeners know that the Exchange will be setting up interviews with them this summer so you can hear from the candidates directly. So, Josh, a lot of interest for you in that first congressional district Republican primary. Anna, how about you? What's the primary race that you're going to be keeping an eye on?
Well, it's a little bit different. I'm actually going to be keeping an eye on what's going on with the Libertarians this year, because they do not get an official primary because they don't have that full party status in New Hampshire. They would need to get a significant mountain of signatures or get at least 4% in a major election. So right now they have to gather signatures for each individual candidate they want to put on the ballot. And they've been very successful in getting candidates on these upper races for governor, U.S. Senate, U.S. House, but now they're faced with the coronavirus pandemic. It's going to be harder to get those signatures this year. And they actually have a lawsuit to try to ease that process.
Wow, really interesting. Hard to stand in front of the grocery store and gather signatures when there is a pandemic going on. Andy, real quick, how about you? Which one of these primary races do you think will be the most competitive? Or just for you as a political scientist, more interesting?
I think the Republican Senate race is the most interesting one, in part because of the anger that the Baldock campaign has with the Republican Party nationally, and even their concern about the Republican Party in the state. It, to me, it's an indication of whether or not Trump has been successful in taking over the Republican Party, because New Hampshire's not really that Trumpian of a state.
Well, and as we close out, we did get an important email from Diane, who says, please let voters know that they may vote on the September 8th primary absentee. It is also possible to vote by mail, but Diane says voters should request their ballots now. And that's Diane again. She is a Portsmouth select person. So Diane, thank you very much for that. And Anna, Josh, Andy, thank you very much for being with us as well. We sure appreciate it. And you've been listening to The Exchange on New Hampshire Public Radio.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. If you missed part of today's program, listen to The Exchange anytime at nhpr.org or subscribe to our podcast. Search Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or Stitcher for NHPR Exchange.